Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content, let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've seen people almost go to the bathroom in their pants in his presence.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
All right, well, happy President's Day, ladies and gentlemen, as we get you through a gloomy Monday afternoon here on KMOX with plenty to cover. Good game for the Battle Hawks yesterday. They didn't win. They got the home opener. I'll tell you, it's pretty impressive, and I was a skeptic, would have lost some money on a bet about how successful they've been with ticket sales over at the Dome. So congratulations to the Battle Hawks, and well, they're 1-1. We'll see. You know, they weren't expected to win last week. Were they the favorites? Alex, do you know if they were the favorites this week? I'm not even sure. But we have a Battle Hawks correspondent, my friend Chris, who's going to join us after 3 o'clock this afternoon. There is one thing I should mention from the onset. This is probably going to be a theme here for the coming weeks. For whatever reason, I decided to maybe start to focus on nutrition and health. I'm going to Mexico in 4 weeks, and I quit sugar over the weekend, for the most part. You know, not natural sugar, but I eat a lot of donuts and candy and things like that. I'm only bringing it up because, man, it's hard right now. I didn't think I was going to make it through Saturday. So usually in a rotten mood. I'm probably in more of a rotten mood this afternoon because of the sugar thing. I don't know if I'm going to last. I really don't know if I'm going to last. There's more information and interesting developments with the woman on the American Airlines flight last week, with the guy just banging on the, you know, the back of her seat because she reclined. And some of that is really interesting. And I had not heard from her, but she was on Fox explaining exactly what happened. Now, one thing I will tell you is I have not seen the entire video. She refers to the video from the beginning in its entirety, and I don't think anyone has showed that yet.
I was leaving a teacher's conference, mm-hmm. and we got onto the plane, and the man behind me, as soon as we got in the air, I reclined, and he asked me if I would not, you know, I would put my seat back up while he ate, which I did, and about 10 minutes later.
By the way, I didn't know that. I'd never heard that little tidbit that he had asked her to put the seat up, and then she complied.
He was done, and I put my seat back down, at which point he started full-on punching the back of my seat really hard.
All right, so some of the other things she said in that interview on Fox and Friends are really interesting, and we're going to toss that out a little bit later this afternoon. My friend Dan Buffa, who is a fellow film critic, is going to join me in the 3 o'clock hour. We're going to toss around a bunch of stuff. Now, I want to talk about this Mike Bloomberg story, because this certainly caught my attention. Bloomberg being propped up as apparently the only savior here for the Democrats, because they're in panic mode with Bernie and the rest of the field. So, and this is going to start happening more and more often. In fact, John Ziegler is going to join me in a couple of minutes, and he had a great column, fellow talk show host, columnist, had a great column the other day about the polling and the flaws in the polling, and how the pollsters aren't focusing on the real things like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. So you think about what I'm about to play you here, and how is this going to play in the farm fields of Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin? Here's a little hint. It's not going to play very well at all. And more of this stuff is going to start to come out. Right now it's coming out because the Sanders folks and the Klobuchar folks and whoever is left in this race are going to try to blast Mike Bloomberg. Right? They don't want him to be the nominee. So he's at this conference in 2016, and he's talking about the economy moving forward with, more of an information-based economy. And he starts this off basically by saying, you know, if you wanted to be a farmer, well, that's easy. I could teach you that.
And we could teach processes. I could teach anybody, even people in this room, so no offense intended, to be a farmer. It's a process. You dig a hole, you put a seed in, you put dirt on top, add water, up comes the corn.
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. Now, one of the rare periods of work, actual work that I ever did in my life, I've talked about this before, happened on a farm outside of Aurora, Illinois, way outside of Chicago. Back then, Aurora was just a boondock. Now it's a, you know, basically a suburb of Chicago. But Big Rock, Illinois is where I walked soybean fields and worked on a farm. Had a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I actually did do a fair amount of work. My Social Security statements for those first 2 years indicate I think I made like $55 my first year, $150. Minimum wage was 2 1/4 or something along those lines. And just to bring it full circle, a few years ago, some of you might remember this, I was thinking about this, and I don't know what would the exact inspiration, I can't remember, but I saw something related to the harvest and combines, and I said, I've not been on a combine in a long, long time. And I'd never actually, because I worked on a farm during the summer, I'd never actually been in the fields during planting or when the combines were working to harvest. So one thing I learned a couple years ago is this stuff is high tech. And I'll tell you what, and this won't surprise most of you, I'm not smart enough to be a farmer. I don't think a lot of people are smart enough to be a farmer in what they have to do, certainly in 2020 and beyond. And I'd say even going back to what was happening in the 1970s. I mean, everyone has their skill sets that other people probably aren't capable of handling or grasping. And Mike Bloomberg thinks it's pretty darn easy.
Then we had 300, you could learn that. Then you have 300 years of the industrial society. You put the piece of metal on the lathe, you turn the crank and the direction of the arrow, and you can have a job. And we created a lot of jobs. 1.98% of the world worked in agriculture. Today, it's 2% in the United States.
All right, so again, manufacturing, agriculture, low information. You don't need many brains to do stuff like that, right, Mike Bloomberg? That's basically what he's saying. And he's talking about this transition into an information society.
Now comes the information economy. And the information economy is fundamentally different because it's built around replacing people with technology. And the skill sets that you have to learn are how to think and analyze. And that is a whole degree level different.
So the last thing he says is, I think this is what's going to be featured in ads. If you combine it with what he said about farmers at the beginning,
you have to have a different skill set. You have to have a lot more gray matter.
All right, so, and that got cut off, I apologize. You have to have a different skill set, a lot more gray matter. Basically, he's saying you need bigger brain capacity. You have to be smarter to be in the information economy. If farmers aren't smart enough, people who are in manufacturing jobs or the trades, which, by the way, I would argue that a lot of people in the trades and some of these other manufacturing businesses are probably smarter than a lot of people that are in the so-called information economy. But Mike Bloomberg is out of touch with where the rest of America is. And overall, I understand to a limited point what he was trying to say, but he certainly wasn't saying it very eloquently. And he's saying it in a way that's going to alienate people in the Midwest and beyond. And I don't think he gets that. I really don't. And I've said this many times, and I've never really quite understood why it doesn't happen. I've even heard people like Bill Maher make this suggestion and others, even lefties. What would be so wrong with the New York Times or the Washington Post or CNN, or I'll use CBS News since we're a CBS News affiliate, to come to town and actually talk to farmers and talk to people who hunt and talk to people who own guns who aren't responsible for mass killings, talk to people in not only the rural areas of Missouri or Wisconsin or Illinois or wherever, but just a little bit outside of the urban areas, maybe a suburb like Wildwood or, you know, St. Charles, and just see where people are. But they're so disconnected that they never really do that. And that's a pretty good example. Now, Mike Bloomberg is being propped up here, like I said, as the savior because they're panicked about Bernie Sanders. And you're going to find more out about that here in just a couple of minutes when Ziegler joins me, because all of this jockeying that's going on right now is about panic mode. And here's an example of that from Politico this morning, if I can find it. Had to do with even a state like Dallas or a state like Texas. You know, you have a very, very red state. And the politicians, here's the headline of the story, we'd be effed. Texas Dems sweat a Bernie Sanders ticket. Veteran operatives fear it undermines an opportunity to flip the state house. Basically, the story says Democratic insiders in Texas are on edge. They're worried nominating the Vermont senator would kneecap their hard-fought campaign to flip the Texas state house. Now, we're going to have John Ziegler come on here and talk about his column about polling. And one of the points that he's going to make is there's a lot of people in Texas right now. There's a lot of people in Missouri. There's a lot of people in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, all across the country. We, by we, I mean you, because you're listening to a news station, you're listening to a talk show, you follow these things. We know that Bernie Sanders is a socialist. Whether you're on the left or the right, you know that, right? Democrats certainly know that. We know that Mayor Pete is gay, and that's relevant because of how it affects the electorate. Not being homophobic. We'll explain that in the next segment. But the majority of people in this country, in fact, probably more than 50% of the people who will go to the polls in November, they don't know that. And they certainly don't know about Mike Bloomberg and how he insulted farmers and thinks that you're sort of a low-information voter just because you're a farmer. Ziegler's coming up. We'll get to that this afternoon. We'll talk a little bit more about the biggest crisis in America, seat reclining, and an audio cut of the day before the end of the show and right into Total Information PM on KMOX.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
Now let's tie some of this all together here. What's happening with the Democratic presidential field, in particular, John Ziegler, conservative columnist, fellow talk show host with me this afternoon, wrote a great column on pollsters and how they're doing a disservice. And I think many of you are going to find this very interesting. Hey, John, how are you?
Always good to talk to you, Mark.
You know, this column I read the other morning right after something happened to me the night before with someone who is a very close friend. And that close friend said to me, and this was stunning, I will tell you, John. But again, this is someone who passively pays attention to politics. And they said, I didn't know Mayor Pete was gay. And it put me back on my heels. I'm like, well, how do you not know that Mayor Pete is gay? But as you point out at the very beginning of this column, you know, I think a lot of us forget that many people are not even nearly dialed into this as a lot of us who follow it on a regular basis, right?
Yeah, I mean, and this is nothing new, although I think it's getting more and more dramatic over time because, you know, us news junkies, we have access to instant information on a 24/7 basis now, but there's also never been more opportunities to disengage from news and particularly politics than there is today. I use my own wife as an example. I mean, my wife oftentimes has no clue about things, and she's a fairly active political person. She's obviously married to someone who is extremely politically active as a commentator. And I'm not making a value judgment about people, but the reality is because of media fragmentation, we have a huge portion of our population. I would submit it would be at least half of those who will vote in a general election who do not remotely follow things on a daily basis. And if you're not following things on a daily basis, you mentioned the issue of Mayor Pete being gay and, in my opinion, more significantly being married to a man, because I think that puts us in a different level that America would have to deal with this issue if he were to be the President of the United States. If you were not following politics regularly and you missed the Time magazine cover from last year, which, let's face it, because of media fragmentation, at least 85% of the American public did, how would you possibly know?
Yeah.
How would you possibly know? Because the media is deathly afraid of that particular issue, especially the liberal media. They don't ever want to touch it. Mayor Pete rarely mentions it. He doesn't give off any overt signs of being gay. Not that I care that he's gay.
Right, I agree.
But I'm telling you, having grown up in Pennsylvania and knowing that Pennsylvania is the key state, and as James Carville famously said, Pennsylvania is Pittsburgh and Philadelphia with Alabama in between, I'm telling you, this is still an issue.
Yes.
And you can argue whether it should be or not, but I'm telling you what is. And it's astonishing to me that the news media doesn't seem to understand this. And I think it's also important to point out, I would venture to guess that it might be even more powerful of an issue that most Americans don't know about is Bernie Sanders calling himself a socialist. I guarantee you, Mark, that there are at least as many people who will vote in November who right now do not know that Bernie Sanders refers to himself as a socialist and is not technically a member of the Democratic Party. Let me guarantee you something, that if Bernie Sanders is the nominee or Pete Buttigieg is the nominee, 100% of voters will know
right.
about the two things we just talked about, because the Trump campaign will make damn right well sure they do.
Yeah, well, and you're right about, you know, I guess maybe I would have been a little bit more naive about Bernie Sanders and the socialism thing just because he's been around, you know, with the last cycle. But I do think you're right. I mean, people aren't, and I've said this even about my own wife, John, because she's very busy. She's a successful professional. She works very hard. You know, we're raising a daughter together. So when I say things like that, not unlike what you said, we get the fact that there are people that are busy that aren't news junkies that aren't really dialed in right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're very busy, and I keep mentioning media fragmentation. Media fragmentation has a huge impact on this. You know, I think I'm a little bit older than you, but not by much. You know, in the 70s and early 80s, you know, people really only had three or four options on television. Now you got 1,000. Right. And so you can be consuming television and media and Internet all day long and have no access at all to anything resembling hard news or political news. That was not the case previously. You had no choice but to at least pick up some knowledge, if only by osmosis and by accident, because there was no other option. By the way, I want to mention one other thing on Sanders, because you just alluded to it. I believe that part of the problem here with Sanders is that because he ran in 2016, people think he's been vetted. But he wasn't vetted in 2016 because nobody really took him seriously. Yeah, it was semi-close, and yeah, there were some moments where Hillary was theoretically in trouble. But no one ever really – the bulk of America never really had to consider the idea of a Bernie Sanders presidential nomination.
He was more the goofy grandfather that got made fun of on SNL, right?
Right. So there was never any serious consideration of him. But now there's the illusion that he has been vetted when he really hasn't been. And I've seen this in many walks of life. The illusion of when someone is vetted when they really haven't been is a very dangerous concept. And I think that's what Bernie is currently benefiting from. And by the way, polls, now these polls are not reliable because you're asking people what they would do, and sometimes they're not honest. And political correctness plays a huge role in this. But there are far more people who openly say they would never consider voting for a socialist for president than would be than answer the same way for someone who happens to be gay. And so I think both Buttigieg and Sanders have incredibly inflated numbers against Trump head to head nationally. And by the way, Pete's numbers are not that great against Trump already. And this is before the entire issues surrounding him. And it's not just being gay. He's 38. He's unemployed. He's the former mayor of a tiny city. He has no real accomplishments. I mean, Trump would have a field day, in my opinion, against both of these candidates. And Democrats, I think, are incredibly naive not to realize that. And pollsters, and this was the point of my column, pollsters are feeding into this because pollsters are incredibly unimaginative. They're very politically correct. These national polls are irrelevant, especially in this day and age of the Electoral College being so skewed in comparison to the national vote. To me, the only polls that matter are Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and people ought to be judging, all right, do they have any knowledge or they have full knowledge of these candidates against Trump? Because let's face it, the American public has 100% knowledge of Donald Trump. I mean, I would think so
at this point. Yeah, John Ziegler, my guest. Let's talk a little bit more about polling because, look, I have defended polls in the past. I'll continue to defend polls. But you're right. The way that these are irrelevant now is they're not talking to people who vote. You know, it's just taking an opinion poll of everyone, not necessarily people who will take that step on election day. But your point about these states, and this is what really is important. You look at Pennsylvania, Selena Zito. I'm sure you know who Selena is. She's on here a lot talking about Pennsylvania and how it is along the lines of your analogy with Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and Alabama. Those are different voters. And from environmental issues to the economy, the Democrats are not connecting. Now, John, one name you haven't mentioned here, and I think that here's a guy that's slowly getting vetted right now. And I played the cuts from Mike Bloomberg where he was kind of, I think, insulting farmers. Here's a guy who is already on the defensive, and if he somehow gets close to a nomination, then I think we'll find a little bit more out about Mr. Bloomberg.
Well, my view on Mike Bloomberg is that you're right, he's not being vetted. There's a massive, I mean, gigantic conflict of interest here because the news media that's supposed to vet him is also being paid millions of dollars by his campaign. I mean, he's literally paying the salaries of those who work for many of these media outlets. I mean, that's a massive conflict of interest. They don't want to kill the Bloomberg candidacy. My gosh, this is manna from heaven for them. So they're not going to kill his candidacy. I am also not convinced that when Democrats fully remember who he is and who he has been, that they're ever going to consider nominating him, at least not. Here's my bottom line on Bloomberg. Could he theoretically buy the Democratic nomination if all hell broke loose? I guess so. But in my view, that would cause a bloody civil war of epic proportions that would leave his candidacy DOA against Donald Trump, because there's no way he can unify the Democratic Party. This is a guy who, as a Republican, elected as a Republican multiple times at the Republican convention in 2004, endorsed George W. Bush. Now, I was happy that he did that, but I'm not a Democratic voter. I'm a lifelong Republican. I cannot believe the Democrats... They're going to be 50% of Democrats are okay with that.
No, especially the folks who supported Bernie Sanders. So before I let you go, then, look, I've never really bought into this, convention fight theory over the years for any presidential cycle with a brokered convention. But I suppose if there's going to be one, this would be the year.
It certainly looks that way on paper. Of course, I thought the same thing in 2016 on the Republican side.
Right.
And there are remarkable similarities between the Sanders candidacy and the Trump candidacy in the primaries, although I would submit that the Sanders candidacy is in big trouble in a general election because he's running against an incumbent with peace and prosperity behind him. And so, if history is repeating itself, it could very well be the case, although I would agree with you that in concept, boy, this certainly does look like a brokered convention situation, unless Bernie gets so far out in front here, which he could do if he wins Nevada and God forbid if he wins South Carolina. I don't think he would, but I mean he's on the verge of breaking out here more dramatically than Trump did in 2016, and there might be too many candidates to take him out. In my view, the only way you take out the best way to take out Bernie is you narrow it down to four candidates: Bernie, Pete, Amy Klobuchar, who I think would be the best candidate to go up against Trump if you're a Democrat. Mike Bloomberg, and Mike Bloomberg uses his money to take out Bernie, not Trump. Other than that scenario, I think that Bernie is probably in the driver's seat right now.
That is a much smarter strategy, John Ziegler. I know it. You know it. I think a lot of people know it, but don't spread that around too much. Thanks for coming on this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Mark.
2:31. Got to get to the news. We're coming back with much more here this afternoon on KMOX. I still think it's amazing, and I'm going to keep it going here, ladies and gentlemen, that the dust up on that American Airlines flight with the woman who was getting her seat punched by the guy behind her is still growing. And now we have back and forth from the airline, and we're going to get to that a little bit. And I've never heard from Wendy Williams, who's the woman who was doing the reclining. And we have some audio from her as we get through the rest of the hour here, or actually after the top of the hour at 3. Kevin Colina's in here. When I was driving my daughter to daycare, you didn't have your mic on, but thank you. What did you say?
Happy President's Day.
I had you potted down to use radio lingo. Driving to my daughter daycare here. First of all, you did a great whole nother story this morning.
Oh, thank you. On my time travel to meet Lincoln.
Yes, yeah. That was awesome.
And I ended up being killed in a firing squad.
One of the more embarrassing things that I would admit, I got a lot of embarrassing. I've never been to the museum in Springfield. Isn't that terrible?
It's worth seeing.
I know. I need to go. Anyway, the story that I heard this morning was about a protest involving Jeff Rorta. So you actually covered, and Jeff's going to join me here in just a couple of minutes. He's the business manager for the St. Louis Police Officers Association. So what was the, and this goes hand in hand with all the controversy around Kim Gardner. Carol did the Kim Gardner interview. We aired a special on Friday morning. So what was the protest all about?
Well, let's go to the tape.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
There are about a dozen Kim Gardner supporters on the sidewalk outside the Police Union Hall on Southampton, the St. Louis Police Officers Association. And they don't like Jeff Rorta. He's their business manager. Protester Zaqid Baroudi explains.
How could the union allow someone who has dishonored their profession to uphold the law? And this is a person who actually got fired from the Arnold Police Department.
And one other thing that they are bringing out of Jeff Rorta's record, which you may not know about, Willie Boyd of the group En Masse Incarceration says Rorta has a past.
When the media mentions the name of Jeff Rorta, it should also inform the public that two judges, Judge Kinder and Judge Wiseman, have found Jeff Rorta not to be a credible police officer, because he had made false reports and his criminal case is dismissed. Jeff Rorta must go.
And I looked up that, and just for background, Jeff Rorta was fired from the Arnold Police Department. He was accused of secretly tape recording an interview with the police chief there. And also, they mentioned a judge found him uncredible or not credible. And that was related to a methamphetamine case that was tossed out because he was associated with it. But the big picture is they don't want Jeff Rorta to be speaking out about Kim Gardner. And they're saying, look at his record. He's been inflammatory. But going back to the Darren Wilson case, the Ferguson case, they just want to defang him. And I ask Daryl Gray, one of the protesters, does Kim Gardner have bigger problems than Jeff Rorta?
You would think.
Is this just a smokescreen?
First of all, let's be very clear. There's a double standard here when it comes to Kim Gardner. Jennifer Joyce had just as many problems, but the Police Officers Association didn't come after Jennifer Joyce. Kim Gardner is a progressive prosecutor. She has called police to task. That is why they're coming after Kim Gardner.
And so they want Jeff Gardner. They want Jeff Rorta fired. They say he has not been a good police officer. They say his record is bad and he's been too harsh. He's said things that could be taken as a call for violence.
Once he said that. Because violence isn't the problem in St. Louis.
Well, he
said. How ironic is that?
Kim Gardner should be removed from office forcibly, if need be. And he later explained he meant, you know, like by the force of a court order.
I got you.
But they took that to mean, you know, like a tar and feather her. So they just say this guy shouldn't be out there, and you're going to hear from him to give his side of it.
All right, Rorta, man, you're a troublemaker, aren't you?
I'm sorry, I dozed off during that recitation of attacks against me. Here's
something that I thought was interesting. So I hear that story this morning, and I text my producer, Fred, and said, hey, let's get Rorta on for some, you know, reaction.
How about
here.
Fred Bottenheimer
right.
over
Thank
there,
you,
ladies
Kenny.
And gentlemen.
I appreciate it. Kenny's down at the Daytona 500. You didn't even know about this, right?
No, I guess you guys got some press alert or something, but we didn't know this was coming until the, I don't know, dozen or so professional cop haters showed up outside the place. I mean, it's the usual suspects, you know, Kim's apologists and the guys that are, I guess, getting paid by George Soros to march up and down people's sidewalks.
Let's address the issues, just, and we've talked about these before. They talk about the Arnold Police Department and the other issue with the case. So your response to that is what?
Well, they said people should go online and read that. I agree with them 100%. I mean, here, if you read the case, I was a police sergeant at Arnold. I took a police report from the police chief's wife alleging a violation of a court order and some domestic problems, and filed that report, and the police chief fired me for it, said that I was being untruthful. The wife finally came forward and said the officer took the report verbatim, that everything I said is in the report and there's no lies here. And guess what? The police chief and the assistant chief were fired for the cover-up. And in the meantime, I was hired as a police chief in the neighboring police department and then elected four times to the Missouri legislature by the same people who were protected by that police department. I mean, I was a hero in Jefferson County for unearthing this corrupt police administration out there. So, I mean, it's just a fantastic retelling of a story that's, you know, on the record. I mean, I encourage all your listeners to go read the transcript from the case.
Well, why do you think, first of all, let's start with this. Did you hear the interview that Carol did with Kim?
I did.
Yeah. Yep. But what do you have response to that? There are several things that popped out at me from that. One of the things I focused on last week, and I don't know how the officers would feel about this, but she described having, and it sounded like she felt that this was just natural to have between the circuit attorney's office, the people who are responsible to prosecute the criminals that the police officers arrest and charge, that there should be an adversarial relationship. That kind of stunned me.
Yeah, I zeroed in on that too, and I was shocked that, not only shocked that she would think that way, but shocked that she would be honest about, you know, the way she felt. I mean, because she's a very, very dishonest person. You know, she's, you know, the special prosecutor's looking at her for suborning perjury, and, you know, she clearly suborned perjury in this bomber shooting case where she put a would-be cop killer gangbanger on the stand and let him lie in front of the grand jury. But, I mean, you know, if they would have had a bell in the studio every time Kim told a lie during that interview, it would have sounded like a penny arcade in there. I mean, it's just a woman who has, you know, no problem just treading all over the truth.
Well, the other thing that happened this morning, look, we're doing stories on this, and it seems, look, you and Kim Gardner are going to throw flames back and forth. I think people get that at this point. But the facts certainly support your side from this perspective. She's not releasing any of this data that she claims to have, and everyone that Kevin Killeen or our news department asked, from Jimmy Edwards to the chief to everyone else responsible for, you know, prosecuting criminals, they're saying that 33%, that's a third of the felony charges in this city, are being tossed out.
Oh, no, she only charges 23% of the people that we bring cases on. I mean, the numbers are abysmal. And then she, you know, just sort of, you know, bald-faced lies and says, well, those numbers aren't true. And your reporter challenges her and says, well, what are the real numbers? And she says, I don't have them. Give me, you know, the dog ate my numbers. I'll get back to you. It's like, so you're the prosecutor of a major city that leads the nation in homicides, and you're not keeping track of these things? I mean, what are your measures of success if you're not keeping track of how many people you file charges on, how many people you get convictions are on, what the average length of the convictions are? What's your measure of success if those things aren't?
I mean, at this point, here's the thing that sort of, I think, wears on everyone, Jeff, and I know you're exhausted from your perspective, that we don't seem to be making any progress whatsoever. And if we continue, because this is not an adversarial relationship between the circuit attorney and the police, this is a hate-hate relationship at this point. So the problem with that is you have crime that occurs on a daily basis. The officers are already not motivated. I'm not saying they're not professional, but let's be honest. Their morale has taken a hit in the aftermath of Ferguson and all these other cases, and now you're presented with a circuit attorney that won't really do the job as prescribed. So I don't know what the end game is here, because both sides are not making any progress. There doesn't seem to be any agreement on anything, and there's just more division and sparring in the media.
Well, listen, we're just not going to stop advocating for crime victims. You know, my people call 911 when their life falls apart and they've gone through some terrible victimization, and we show up and we try to put the pieces of that back together and help these families through the torturous process of being a crime victim, particularly when it's violent crime. And Kim Gardner should be a partner in that, not an adversary. So, you know, the handful of people out in front of the police hall today do not want cops to have a stronger voice. They want us to have a weaker voice. That's why they want to get rid of me. They're not advocating for cops to have a stronger voice. They want them to have no voice.
Well, it seems that way. And I guess, going back to my previous comment, man, this is just—it's just exhausting, isn't it?
Yeah. And we'll make it through. I mean, I get a paycheck whether Kim Gardner does her job or not. My cops get a paycheck whether Kim Gardner does her job or not. It's the crime victims. You know, that's where I try to take this conversation back every time. You know, it's the crime victims whose lives are just left in a shambles. You know, and Kevin did some great reporting when Kim had all the other, you know, nutbag prosecutors from across the country here to sing her praises. There was this little black woman out on the curb holding this handmade sign saying, my son is dead, my son is dead, my son is dead, asking for justice for her kid. And it's like, you know, why isn't that the biggest story, that so many people, particularly people of color, because they're disproportionately the victim of crime, aren't getting justice because of Kim Gardner's perverse definition of...
Yeah, and the other question beyond that is, why aren't our friends at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, who are always so concerned about social justice, not concerned about that type of justice?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is not social justice. It's not reform. It's just amnesty. I mean, she's just plain and clearly letting violent criminals free, and that hurts everybody in the city, but particularly people of color. And then I get sued for being a racist. My organization gets sued for being a racist when we're advocating for crime victims who are mostly African American.
It is utterly ridiculous. Jeff Ward, I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, pal.
All right, take care. 250.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
So when Jeff Rota was mentioning 911, it reminded me, my sister actually sent me this story earlier, and she was actually upset. Apparently, everybody thinks they can be a radio producer, right? Alex is in there in the studio. It's not that hard, right? It's like being a farmer. Is plant the seed, and it grows. That's essentially what happens. If you miss the Mike Bloomberg comments, we will add. Something tells me that might be audio cut of the day. I haven't narrowed down audio cut of the day completely. So I think the circumstance that I'm about to describe would be different given a different person with different socioeconomic circumstances. But listen, you tell me what you think. It is a situation where this woman got jammed up. So this is Alpine, Utah, and KSL, which is a TV station out there, the NBC affiliate, also a really good radio station, KSL, in Salt Lake City. It was a 911 call that officers had never received before. A Utah mother in desperate need of baby formula for her newborn in the middle of the night. Shannon Bird is the one who said, "I've never not had food for my newborn. It was really scary for me." She calls police. The story happened a couple weeks ago, 2:12 in the morning, January 28th. In a recording, and I don't have, I meant to pull this 911 call, but I actually couldn't find the audio. They included the story in here, and they didn't have a link to the audio that I saw. Anyway, she's telling the operator she has no way to feed her six-week-old baby. She says, "I've been calling neighbors, and no one will answer. I've never been in this predicament ever. My milk is literally dried out. This is my fifth kid, and this has never happened." So she tells the dispatcher that her husband was out of town and that the rest of her five children were sleeping. She normally breastfeeds her infants, didn't have any formula in the house. So Shannon Bird says the baby was screaming. "I called my husband. We were brainstorming. I started calling neighbors and teenagers in the area, my little brother, and no one was awake. Officers with the Lone Peak Police Department answered the call for help. Officer Brett Wagstaff stopped at a convenience store, picked up a gallon of milk, and delivered it to Bird's front door. But then, of course, the baby was too young for regular milk, needed formula. So you can even see on a body camera footage, he hands her the milk and says, "We'll be right back with some formula for your baby." So I don't know what people would think about that because, you know, she's living in a pretty nice house. She's not an unwealthy woman, let's just put it that way. But she calls the cops, and it's interesting because if you were in that position and you had nowhere else to turn, I mean, you could do like Uber Eats maybe, but did they do that at 2 in the morning? I don't know about that. Second hour of the show coming up.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.